You're listening to DTFHN for August 3rd, 2026. I'm your hand-typed, no copy-paste host, Jack Haxman. We are your daily tech feed for Hacker News. A website W section is a peer review board that nobody appointed and everybody fears. Today is about the difference between owning a thing and merely holding it. Doors open, walk in. What does it mean to understand something you didn't write? That question sounds abstract until you're staring at 400 lines of machine produced in 9 seconds. And you realize you have no idea where anything lives anymore. Ankur Sethi wrote about this, and his solution is so unfashionable it loops back around to brilliant. He tells his coding assistant, "Never touch my files. Show me the code in chat. I'll type it in myself. Every line, by hand." He estimates it costs him, instead of 10 ICs, he's maybe 2 ICs. He pays that tax deliberately, and here's what he buys with it. A spatial map. He knows where every piece of functionality sits in his own code base. When something breaks, he doesn't search. He goes. There's precedent here that predates all of us. In 1978, Kerning and Ritchie published the C programming language, and the instruction was not read the examples. It was type them in, run them, break them. Every generation of programmers since learned the same way. You copied listings out of Byte magazine, out of Compute's Gazette, 20 pages of hexadecimal, and somewhere in that tedium the machine's logic became yours. Sethi is a teenager again, told never to paste from a forum answer, and he's applying that same discipline to a fundamentally new source of code. The thing worth sitting with is what he's actually protecting. Not productivity. Comprehension. There's a difference between a code base you own and one you're merely the legal custodian of. And that difference shows up the day something goes wrong at 2 in the morning. One commenter asks the obvious question, why use the LLM at all? And that misses it. He's not using the model to write code. He's using it as a reference manual that already read the Django docs for him. The fastest lookup ever built. The typing is where the knowledge transfers. This is the deeper point, and it applies well beyond one developer's side projects. The tools are getting extraordinary. The models are open. The weights are downloadable. The capability is genuinely in your hands. But capability delivered isn't capability understood. And the gap between those two is where dependence grows. Sethi found a workflow where the machine accelerates him without replacing him. That's not a retreat from AI. That's someone figuring out how to stay the author of his own work while the tools get faster underneath him. Deliberate friction, chosen on purpose at the exact point where understanding gets made. That thread about staying the author of your own work. Here's a flip side. Pause Story 2 is about what happens when you become the machine's hands instead. I built a system once that would happily forward a message it had never parsed, fast, reliable, completely useless. Because the value was supposed to be in the parsing, and it had skipped that part. Someone wrote a blog post today about the human version of that bug. The piece is called, "Don't Be a Meat Proxy," and the complaint is precise. You ask a question in Slack. You leave feedback on a pull request. And what comes back is the words, "Claude said," followed by 400 lines of model output, pasted verbatim. The author's response, "I can talk to Claude myself, faster, and I control the context." Break that down to first principles. What is a code review actually for? It's a knowledge transfer event. One person's model of the system meets another person's model, and where they disagree, you find the bug. The artifact, the common thread, is a byproduct. The real product is two humans who now understand the change. Now run the meat proxy version forward. Ticket goes into the model. Code comes out unread. Reviewer's feedback goes back into the model unread. Iterate until green. It ships. It genuinely ships. But ask who implemented it. And the honest answer is, the reviewers did, via Claude code, using you as transport. You were the network layer. The author gives an example of what makes this so tiring. He got handed the phrase, quote, NATS control plane events, stream leader election / R3 quorum reform during pod churn. He had to look up almost every word. That's the tell. Jargondense output is cheap to generate and expensive to read. And pasting, it moves the whole cost onto the other person. His fix is elegant and it costs nothing. Prompt the model all you want, then read it, understand it, validate it, and write the response in your own words. Your own words are the certificate. They're proof of work. The one thing that can't be copy-pasted. And here's what I love about this. It's not a break on the technology. The models keep getting better. The weights keep getting downloadable. The capability keeps landing in more hands. None of that changes. What changes is where you insert yourself. Be the compression step, not the relay. Read 400 lines. Write 4 sentences that mean something. That's the job. That's still the job. So if that's the job on your end, what happens when the tools doing the reading get this good? Story 3. In Yuyuzhatian, Netscape open sourced the browser because they'd already lost the distribution war. Releasing the code was a retreat. 28 years later, Alibaba releases the weights to their flagship model. The Frontier Wah, the Max Class Wah. And it reads as an advance, same gesture, opposite direction. That inversion is the whole story. Quen 3.8 Max ships with the weights open. First time a Max Class Quen has done that. And a 27 billion parameter version lands next week, which matters more than the headline number. Because that's the one that runs on hardware you already own. The previous generation of that model is already what people reach for when they want something local and good. Now it gets a successor. One reader in the thread asks the question that should keep boardrooms awake. Where exactly is the moat? Every call to a language model is idempotent. You send the entire conversation, you get a response, the server forgets you existed. There's no accumulated state, no network effect, no switching cost beyond the API shape. The product is a function. Functions are copyable. Take that all the way. If the moat isn't the model, and it isn't because someone just gave the model away, then the moat has to be something else. Compute? That's rented. Data? Increasingly synthetic and increasingly shared. Talent? Talent moves. What's left is distribution and inertia, which is exactly what Netscape had right up until it didn't. The perception benchmarks are the part builders should be looking at. Image to HTML, screenshot to working page. People are already posting side-by-side comparisons of design mock-ups against generated output. And the gap is closing fast enough to be uncomfortable for anyone whose job description is turns Figma into divs. That disruption is real, and I won't pretend otherwise. But the tool landing in the open is what determines whether the person displaced can pick it up or has to rent it back. Another commenter wants something narrower. A model that knows one language deeply instead of 40 shallowly. Smaller, sharper, local. With open weights, that's not a feature request. That's a weekend. Fine-tune it. Prune it. Ship it. That's the difference. When the weights are closed, you file a ticket. When they're open, you build the thing. Now for something completely different. From open weights to open widgets. Jane Street built a UI library, and it's a genuine delight. Six little dice faces, right there in the source. Unicode characters for 1 through 6, sitting in a list at the top of the example component. That's the demo Jane Street chose to lead with. Not a trading dashboard, not a risk monitor. A dice roller. A thing a beginner could read. Jane Street builds almost everything internally on Bonsai. The corporate directory. The tools that watch live trading systems. And they've put the framework in the open, with documentation that starts by showing you how to make a button change a number. Go into the machinery and it earns the admiration. Components are purely functional state machines. Values recompute only when the inputs they actually depend on change. And here's the part that separates this from the React mental model, that incrementality isn't welded to rendering. It's a primitive you can point at anything. An expensive business calculation running over a live updating dataset gets the same surgical recomputation as your view layer. Most frameworks fuse state, incrementality, and rendering into one abstraction called the component and hand you the bundle. Bonsai unbundles them. State lives outside the component hierarchy, so nesting stateful widgets inside a tabbed interface doesn't force you to hoist every child's model up to the top of the app. The framework scopes it for you. Then there's testing. You write an expect test, you type text into an input programmatically, and you get a diff of the DOM, minus the old span, plus the new one. Your assertion is the diff itself. Nobody clicking through a staging environment hoping they remembered every path. And it's OCaml top to bottom. Same types on the server and in the browser. Jane Street had internal tools that lived in terminals for years. The types and business logic came straight over to the web. A commenter says, every time they see OCaml, they feel less than and confused. I want to sit with that, because it's the honest question here. Open source only equalizes if people can actually reach it. A language barrier is a real barrier. But look at what's shipped. Public repo, working examples, a composition comparison written by the person who designed the thing, explaining the trade-offs against other approaches. Another commenter noticed the JavaScript compiler lacks tail call optimization. So, there's a user land trampoline. You can find that because the code is there to read. Someone wished there were more OCaml shops. The path to more OCaml shops runs through exactly this. The firm with the most demanding requirements showing everyone how they did it. That was a language ecosystem opening its doors. Story 5 goes the other direction, pause, email, authentication, where the whole point is deciding who gets shut out. The strongest case against DMARC is that it's security theater with a compliance checkbox attached. Here's that case made honestly. You publish 3 DNS text records. You spend 6 months chasing down every marketing tool and ticketing system that sends mail as you. You reach P equals reject, and an attacker registers your bankalerts.com, publishes perfectly valid SPF and DKIM, passes DMARC with flying colors, and fishes your customers on the first try. The protocol did exactly what it promised. Your customers still got raw. That argument is correct on the facts and wrong about what it proves. DMARC answers one question. Did the owner of the domain in the visible from address authorize this message? That's it. It doesn't ask whether the message is malicious. It doesn't ask whether the domain is trustworthy. It asks whether the name on the envelope matches someone who holds the keys. Narrow, behi, igvul, mechanical. The complaint isn't that DMARC fails at its job. It's that people keep hiring it for a different one. The question nobody in the thread is asking, who decided the reject policy meant you were finished? Because the mechanics are genuinely elegant. To from addresses per message. The envelope 1, which mail servers read to route the thing and you never see. the visible one, which your male client displays and your brain trusts. Set independently by design since the early 80s, SPF checks the envelope. DKIM carries a cryptographic signature with its own domain. DMARC's entire contribution is alignment, tying whichever one authenticated back to the address. A human actually reads, either path passes, it passes. Neither does it fails. And every piece of that is a public specification. RFC 999-9. Text records and DNS you can read with DIG. A commenter asks what the go-to open implementation is these days, since OpenMark has gone quiet. And that question is only askable because the whole stack is open. You can verify the protocol does what the article says. Try that with your spam filter's model weight. Another reader shows up to tell the author their draft has writing smells. Fine, but the piece is doing something rarer than good prose. It's telling you the limits of the tool it's explaining. Most security writing sells you the ceiling. This one hands you the floor plan and points at the door it doesn't lock. Now here's a thread that pulls the other direction entirely, a pause away from what you can't guarantee toward what you can. Story 6. Rust wants your types to stay put. 400,000 crates on crates.io. Assume a fact about your data that the language never lets you question. Everything you build can be picked up and set down somewhere else in memory. Rust is proposing to make that assumption optional. The mechanism is a trait. Move, an unsafe auto trait, opted out with a negative impl, and a type that says, move keeps one stable address for its entire existence. Its sibling is forget. A type that says, forget cannot be handed to memforget. Its destructor runs, not by convention, by type system. Take the opposite position first, because it's the honest one. Guaranteed destructors are a lie the compiler cannot tell. A commenter names the hole precisely. Memforget was made safe in the first place because reference cycles already leak values, and the compiler can't see a cycle. Put your forget handle in an RC that points back at itself. Walk away, and the destructor never runs. The guarantee is defeated by two safe lines. That objection is correct, and it doesn't sink the design. The current situation is that leaking is trivially available through a single documented function call, so no API can depend on cleanup for soundness. After the change, leaking requires constructing a cycle that holds your type, which the ecosystem can make impossible by keeping. Forget types out of RC and ARC, not a proof, a closed door where there was an open hallway. What that buys, scope spawn for async, a task handle that borrows from its parent stack frame, whose destructor joins the task, where the join is structurally guaranteed. That pattern is currently impossible in safe Rust. Async drop follows. And pin. The thing every async programmer has bounced off. Becomes a property of types instead of a property of places. Which is the simpler statement of the same idea. The design process is worth watching more than the design. This is a project goal, not an accepted RFC. A commenter is careful to say so. Without Boats has a competing proposal putting immovability on the reference instead of the type. The champions are named. There's a Zulip channel. The tracking issue is public. And the viability test is real-world use in the Linux kernel, where self-referential types have been the sharpest edge. A language changing its most foundational assumption in the open with the counterproposal linked from the same page. That's the part worth copying. Moving on. Someone posted a link to Doom running on regular expressions, not as a punchline, as a demonstration, and underneath it, the old warning, the one every programmer has recited at least once. You can't parse HTML with regex. HTML isn't regular. Go get a parser. Both things are on the same page, and only one of them is true. Nikita Popov's 2012 piece works the seam between them. In formal language theory, regular is a precise word. A regular grammar has rules of exactly three shapes, and everything you can build from those shapes, a finite state machine can recognize. Natural numbers qualify. Nested tags do not. That part of the folklore is correct. But the thing in your editor called a regular expression stopping that decades ago. PCRE has back references. Look ahead and recursion. A pattern that can invoke itself. Think about a fugue. A fugue has a subject, a short melodic line, and the entire form comes from one moot. The subject enters against itself, same melody, offset in time, and suddenly you have structure that no single voice contains. Nothing was added except the ability to quote yourself. That's recursion in a regex. The syntax barely changes. The class of things you can match jumps a whole tier of the Chomsky hierarchy. From regular to context-free, which is where balanced brackets and nested tags actually live. Add leakhead and back references and PCRE climbs past context-free entirely. So the warning is right about a tool nobody has used since roughly 7190-75, and the name stuck to something far more powerful. That gap costs real hours. People are told a job is impossible when it's merely difficult. Or they reach for a regex on something genuinely unbounded because nobody explained where the actual line is. The reason we can settle this at all is that PCRE is open. The grammar is documented, the source is readable, and Popov could go check what the engine does rather than repeat what he'd heard. A closed engine would leave you with folklore and a support ticket. Here, the answer is in a file you can open, which is the useful reading of the Doom demo. Not that you should parse HTML with regex. In production, use the parser. But knowing the true ceiling of your tools is different from knowing the received rules about them. One is engineering, the other is inheritance. So, how do you go from reading sores to reading a city? Someone mapped San Francisco in isometric pixels. Story 8. Google's photorealistic statistics are the constraint here. They're a global mesh. Real geometry, real textures, streamed to anyone with an API key, beautiful data, closed pipeline. You can render it, you can fly through it. But the terms live on Google's side of the line, and the tiles arrive as a stream you don't own. What the builder behind Isopolis did is take that stream and cook it down into something else entirely, an isometric pixel map of San Francisco, scrollable, hand-tuned, sitting on a page you can just open. The dev write-up lays out the pipeline, isometric.nyc. The obvious ancestor project looked at 3D building data and rejected it. This one grabbed it. An isometric is not a cheap shortcut. Anyone who's done game art knows this. You're taking a world with real depth and flattening it along a fixed axis, which means every object has to look correct from exactly one angle forever, and the ones behind it have to occlude correctly, and the tile seams have to line up, and the whole thing has to read as a city, and not a pile of colored rectangles. A commenter with game dev scars put it well. Deceptively difficult, grab the bull by the horns. One reader noticed the city famous for its hills looks suspiciously flat. That's the tell. Isometric projection has no perspective, no vanishing point, so vertical relief has to be faked entirely through drawn height, and if you exaggerate it, the map stops tiling cleanly. It's a real trade-off, honestly made. Now run the architecture question forward. The tiles are Google's. The pixel art is not. Once this render exists as an image on someone's own server, it's durable in a way the source stream isn't. If the API turns shift tomorrow, the map is still there. That's not a knock on Google for publishing the data. Publishing it is what made this possible at all. It's just the useful distinction between data you can query and artifacts you can hold. Another commenter mentioned building a voxel Google Earth from public height map scans, which is the same instinct. Open elevation data. Personal renderer, nobody's off switch but your own. That's where this goes. Somebody ships a city. Somebody else ships the tooling. And eventually, you get an atlas nobody had to be granted. Now, Octane, React's programming model, actually compiled. What if the migration path is the whole product? Octane is a compiler for React's programming model. Same functions, same hooks, same props, same context. And instead of a virtual DOM diffing its way to the truth at runtime, the compiler figures out what actually depends on what and emits targeted updates. Svelte's insight, wearing React's clothes. The file extension changes from TSX to TSRX. Your instincts about where state lives do not change at all. The technical claim is fine. Fine-grained reactivity beats reconciliation on benchmarks. Solid proved it, Svelte proved it, and one commenter noticed Vue's vapor mode quietly posting excellent numbers in Octane's own comparison table, which is a good sign about the honesty of that table. The pitch that deserves attention is the incremental one. Move components one at a time, ship the whole way. Components keep their shape, so an AI agent can do the migration without redesigning your architecture around a new reactive model. Run that forward 5 years. If a framework's components are shaped identically to the framework you're leaving, migration stops being a rewrite and becomes a transform. The switching cost. The thing that has kept React dominant long past the point where its runtime model was the best available. Approaches the cost of running a code mod overnight. Frameworks would compete on execution rather than on how much of your life you've already sunk into them. That is a genuinely different industry. The catch is that this cuts both ways, and the honest version says so. A migration cheap enough to automate is a migration cheap enough to reverse, and cheap enough for the next thing to eat Octane the same way. Whoever builds the last framework standing does not get to keep standing. The commons are doing their own thing. Somebody clocked the comparison page as Claude generated and said so with a laugh, which is now just a normal observation about documentation. Somebody else wants the SSR story emphasized. They're hunting for a Rails or Phoenix equivalent in TypeScript with React-shaped APIs, and that's a real gap nobody has closed. And somebody's iPhone hitched loading the differences from React button, which is a delightful thing to report on a performance framework's landing page. The compiler is the interesting artifact here. Not because it's fast, because it makes leaving easy. And a framework that makes leaving easy is making a bet on being good, rather than on being unavoidable. So a framework that makes leaving easy. What about the tools that make sharing hard? Story 10 asks whether you can talk to an AI without handing over everything. I build a masking layer for a pipeline once. Placeholder token swapped in before a payload left the process, swapped back on return. The hard part was never the detection. It was idempotence. Restore twice and you corrupt the text. Miss a restore, and the user reads gibberish about someone named John Smith, who doesn't exist. Pizzagard is that problem solved in a browser extension. Names, emails, phone numbers, credit cards, API keys. Spotted in your message, replaced with unique placeholders, sent to ChatGPT or Claude or DeepSeek, and then reversed in the reply so you read it naturally. All of it local, no telemetry, no server call, no analytics. The extension only wakes up on a supported chat page. There's a lineage here. In 1993, when the Mixmaster remailers were being built, the Insight was the same one. The safest architecture is the one where the intermediary structurally cannot know. Not promises about retention policies. An architecture where the sensitive value never crossed the boundary in the first place. PisaGuard is that principle miniaturized down to a content script running against a text area. The engineering that deserves credit is the restoration map. You need placeholders that survive an LLM rewriting your sentence, reformatting it, quoting it back inside a code block. That's a genuinely adversarial round trip, and getting it right is craft. A commenter asked what the point is. Who accidentally hands personal data to an LLM? The honest answer is everyone who pastes a stack trace with an auth header in it, everyone who debugs a customer record, everyone doing their actual job. The friction of manual censoring is exactly why nobody does it consistently. Tooling beats discipline. It always has. And the shape of the solution is the thing worth noticing. Not a privacy-preserving SaaS. Not a proxy you have to trust. A PMPM install. A test suite. A build script producing unpacked folders for Chrome and Firefox. And a repo you can read line by line to verify the claim. That's the correct answer to a trust problem. Put the code where people can check it. This has been your daily tech feed for Hacker News for August 3rd, 2026. This podcast is entirely AI-generated. Scripts by Claude Sane 4.7. Voice by Quen 3TTS. Not affiliated with Hacker News or Y Combinator. Now go build something you'd be proud to explain out loud. We'll see you back here tomorrow.